how has the mild-mannered, generally innocuous Health Services Consultative Committee been drawn into a heated political debate with the Health Minister? Laurie Hooper has accused the committee of deliberate falsehood, lying to you and me, and both sides have accused each other of making defamatory statements. Andrew Cole stepped down as chair of the Health Services Consultative Committee in January and left the committee in May. For what is a fairly innocuous document, this has developed into quite a significant political issue, hasn't it?
That's correct. The annual report is sent to the CEO of DHSC, and as you probably know, we had a very kind access to some of Manx Care Services as well. So the report covered both DHSC and Manx Care.
Basically, he's just trying to upgrade and update the regulations governing the Health Services Consultative Committee. Is there a problem with that?
Yes, there's a very significant problem, Phil. We first met the current minister in January 2022 as a committee, and we all agreed that the revised regulations should be devised alongside the updated and now overdue NHS Reform Bill. So this approach was introduced by him in January with us, and we agreed that was not intended to be a rushed process, but logically worked through alongside the NHS Reform Bill. Now, what actually happened, as we now know, was that a very surprising and sudden change was made when the public announcement was brought in about the way that the HSCC regulations would be modernised and updated to reflect its future role, a future role that none of the then committee knew anything about, and which changed its remit considerably.
This whole issue started to heat up very significantly in the summer,
yes,
when you made some quite extraordinary comments on various media platforms about the minister. And you know, the minister was quite upset by this and said, "I really hope that Andrew Cole has strong evidence to back up his defamatory statements." Do you have strong evidence?
Well, yes. The minister, I think, at the time said he was rather surprised, knowing me, at the approach I had taken. And I'm quite surprised at myself as well, but I had to do this.
Because you're not known for outspoken interventions in the political arena, are you?
I don't think I am. But what had happened was I was obviously not on the committee at this point, and so I felt very strongly that I was the only voice who could speak independently about the way that the members of the committee had been treated by...
And that in itself is quite a worry, because the committee is supposed to be independent and be able to speak with a degree of independence from the department.
Well, yes, and not only that, but the meeting at which this behaviour took place was the annual feedback meeting where the minister feeds back on the annual report. And as is well documented now, that didn't happen. And the next day, two members came round to my house and said, "This is what has happened," and gave me a factual, quite detailed account of what had happened.
So what did they say?
Well, they said that they'd been treated to, this is from memory, but over an hour of what the minister himself described as a rant about the unlawful nature of the annual report and the many, many inaccuracies that it contained, and that it was not a feedback meeting, it was not a discussion. They weren't able to take notes about what actions were necessary from it. And the outcome of that meeting was that the minister said that the regulations would be immediately changed, which they were, and that the chair of the HSCC under the revised regulations would be appointed by the department, that the secretarial support would be from the department, that their attendance at various subcommittee meetings in the department would no longer be required, that their remit will be changed to have much more of a patient voice focus through Manx Care. Not that that's a bad thing. That was already covered in different ways, we felt. But the certainly the independent scrutiny of governance and process would be removed. And in our view, that was one of the key points of having a health services consultative committee, as a way of positively supporting and challenging process within the department.
You've suggested that perhaps the minister was in breach of the ministerial code, probably.
Yes.
In breach of the Nolan principles.
That's correct. And I wrote down very carefully what was reported to me, and I looked at the ministerial code and the Nolan principles, and that's why I felt that was the case.
So, and of course, the Nolan principles are the principles of good governance, which Isle of Man government, along with many other governments, have adopted as core principles for behaviour of politicians.
Yes, they describe, not just politicians, but anybody in public life, in fact. Yes, yeah. I mean, they're common sense, they're very easy to understand.
So you've suggested that these were broken by the minister.
Yes.
And the political member.
I have.
So possibly worth exploring just why you felt that.
For the reasons I've already given about the way that the approach in that meeting with the HSCC was taken, with no warning. They reported that it was aggressive and persistent, and the outcome was completely unexpected. The behaviour, we could look at the principles and go through them one by one, but it was a defamatory meeting in the way that it was conducted, and it was rude and it wasn't honest.
And you know, the minister, rather than sort of withdrawing and offering olive branches, more or less accused you of making it up.
Yes, I mean, this is a slightly separate issue. The issue we've just been discussing was the behaviour of two politicians toward a publicly appointed body, or the members of it. What we're now discussing is the consequence of what happened after that, quote, rant, unquote. And yes, the minister has said on record in the House of Keys, so it's now in Hansard, that the HSCC has lied in its annual report. And that is defamation, and because it's not correct, in my view, and it's potentially damaged the current operational effectiveness and reputation, and maybe future recruitment to voluntary advisory posts in the widest sense, not just within the health services. And I worry about recruitment to employment tribunals and other committees that sit, because people will have heard this and thought about it. So despite a very specific and clear letter to the minister from me explaining how he was incorrect to say that we'd told a deliberate falsehood, and I personally wrote that paragraph in the report, so it relates to me as well, he still maintains that we have told a deliberate falsehood. And he, you know, he replied to me very promptly and politely to say, no, you're wrong, Andrew.
People listening to this will be wondering, well, what's going on here? Has there been some level of bad feeling between Mr. Cole and the minister in the past? Is this sort of a grudge that now that you're out of the perhaps more diplomatic confines of being a committee member, that you're getting your own back on the minister?
It's a fair question, and it's not, that's not correct. No, we've had a good working relationship going right back to, I think he was a pupil of mine in a Year 9 geography class at one time, but subsequently and more seriously, we had some very good engagement over the education bill when he was a political member for the education department, and we've had a good relationship. And when he said he was surprised that I'd acted like that, and I agreed that I was surprised as well, that's what it amounts to. But I felt it needed saying, and I had to be the only person who could really say it.
He says that the report contains a raft of errors. It's impossible for him to rebut every single point because there's so much wrong with the report. How do you respond to that?
Well, my response is that, as in every other year when I've been involved with the report, it's collated from the notes that we have made at meetings we have attended, we produce a monthly and quarterly summary of bullet points by way of feedback to the department, and we hope that that's widely shared, including with the minister and political members. So what's received to put into the report is then carefully edited so that there's not repetition, and it's then checked with the officers in the DHSC and with their counterparts in Manx Care in this case. So they fed back to us and offered some corrections, all of which, by the way, we did take up and make those changes because we needed to be accurate. So are there inconsistencies in the report? Yes. Why is that? Because it spans a whole year from April to March, and things change during the year. So what we reported was said in a meeting in April might not match something on the same subject that was said in a meeting in September or January.
Minister is very clear. He has written to the committee saying that I think what you are doing is unlawful, you need to change, and the committee has not. How do you respond to that?
Well, I decided when I left the committee that I should not keep documentation connected with it because I was no longer a member. But my information from asking the current committee is that that is not correct, and the HSCC received no such correspondence, and I certainly don't have any recollection of that. The only contact I'm aware of on this matter was when we sent the minister a so-called letter of comfort in January this year when I was still a member, and that didn't receive a reply. The letter of comfort was to try and outline our current position and reassure him that there wasn't a big problem.
Obviously, the minister's role is to provide leadership, yes, both in relation to the department and more generally for the delivery of health services across the island. That is effectively what he's paid for. So it is okay. I mean, you know, it's quite reasonable for the minister to adopt views on certain points and to say, actually, you know what, this isn't working the way we would hope. The minister is not known for trying to silence criticism. So why do you suppose that there appears at least to be this massive gulf between what you're saying and what the minister's saying?
There does. It's a difficult one to speculate about. I'm personally very aware that the minister didn't like the fact that I brought into the public arena his behaviour, and I would hate to think that his actions now are related to that, because they shouldn't be. He is entitled to do all of those things, and he can change the regulations at the drop of a hat if he wants to do that. Current members of the committee and myself as a past member would be very disappointed about the loss of agency and support that such a committee could have given had the regulations been revised in a different way. I mean, we're a small nation with a small pool of talent from which to generate good governance in process, and from that good government as well. And I think all of these really unfortunate events have reduced the likelihood of that being available to political people in the future.
The Health Services Consultative Committee comprises of how many members?
Nine.
Nine members. And you're all paid to perform your functions?
We can claim travel expenses, and we have an attendance allowance for going to meetings. So that's, if you can call that paid. We're not out of pocket, but it's not a salaried post, it's a voluntary post by lay members. I would guess it probably took three days a week-ish of my time on average, because if you're invited to go and listen to a meeting or observe something, you go and do it because it's informative, and then it might help get a better understanding of what's going on and what needs to happen.
The minister basically wants the Health Services Committee to be far more focused on patient experience. Is that a reasonable desire on the part of the minister?
Yes, I think it is. That is what he would like, and we don't disagree with the fact it's not a bad thing in principle to have more patient focusing work and pick up patient voice. It raises a lot of questions, first of all, about why the health services consultative committee needs to do that when Manx Care already have appointed their own patient service user representatives, and the DHSC also has patient representatives. So is it really necessary as well? And then secondly, how it would change our remit and our boundaries for access, because we have never had any interaction with clinical settings. How would that actually work, and how would it then fit in with confidentiality depending on what was discussed? Another aspect is that that's all very well and good, but as I said before, if government departments welcome scrutiny and advice from lay people, the new regulations reduce that significantly by removing responsibility for the committee to organise its own business, because its business would become organised more by the department, including the chair and secretarial support and the appointment of members, who would no longer be appointed by the Appointments Commission. So it's removing one level of independence, in my view.
Is the chair appointed from among the members?
Yes.
And secretarial support is provided by who?
Well, it is. Secretarial support is provided by the department, but it's actually currently a past member of the committee who can be detached from departmental business. Now, that has pros and cons, but if the secretarial support was from within the pool of the department's current employees, then that in turn would muddy the waters in terms of an independent view, perhaps, potentially. Members are appointed currently, or were appointed under the previous regulations, by the Appointments Commission, so the post will be advertised and applied for in the usual way.
What advice were you to feel so presumptuous would you give to Tynwald members when this matter crops up?
I think very, very strongly, and if I can use this platform to lobby Tynwald members, that the regulations that have been brought in recently are not fit for purpose, and in the long term might do more harm than good, not just within the health services, but more widely across departments who might wish to engage with independent lay members of the public who can give advice. So I think that they should not be supported by negative resolution in this week's sittings, that they should be changed alongside the NHS Reform Bill, as was the original purpose, that they should be reconsidered and done much more carefully and slowly alongside the other legislative matters that will happen alongside the NHS Reform Bill. And this Reform Bill is really very, very important. It would also give the opportunity to consider whether the HSCC would be involved with social care, because that will come under the new bill, and if so, how, because its current resource is not great enough in terms of members to do that.
Hopefully the Minister may choose to listen to this programme, and if he is listening, advice to the Minister?
Well, a difficult one, but I would love to know that the Minister recognises that his behaviour was not appropriate towards current members in the so-called feedback meeting, and to apologise for that. And then secondly, to recognise that his original idea to bring in revised regulations in a careful way alongside the Reform Bill was the correct approach, and he should revert to that, please.
That was former Chair of the Health Services Consultative Committee, Andrew Cole. Chris Thomas is bringing two motions to Tynwald, one to debate the controversial report and another to annul the changes brought forward by the Minister. Why is he doing this?
Two facts, first of all. The first one is that frequently the Health Services Consultative Committee, which is a body that gives advice to the Department of Health and Social Care, but also to Tynwald members, normally, frequently, that report has been laid before Tynwald. Minister Hooper decided not to lay it before Tynwald when it was available in June. So the Health Services Consultative Committee sent it to Tynwald members. And so my first fact is that I've now laid the report before Tynwald. And the second point is, I believe, as does the Health Services Consultative Committee, as I think some of my colleagues do, that the regulations were drafted in haste, quickly, in a bit of a rage about what happened at a couple of meetings in June 2023 in connection with some items in that report. And the law requires consultation. In the past, when the current regulations, the 2012 regulations, were introduced, there was consultation. Certainly, regardless of consultation, you need thought. And we have a what would happen if Timwood members voted to annul these regulations is the former regulations would continue to apply. And what the committee then wants to do is pick up some of the excellent proposals that the department's got to work them through properly with doctors and nurses, professional bodies, with Manx Care, because there's no evidence that Manx Care were even consulted, and then actually come back with a rational, optimal system, putting aside the sort of rage and knee-jerk response that's happened in June, July, August, September this year.
There seems to be a really quite distinct and clear impasse between what the Health Services Committee, which we know to be reasonably mild-mannered, they're not known for making extraordinary outlandish or, how did the minister describe it?
Lies.
What is going on here?
That's right. The Health Services Consultative Committee is like many other bodies in the Isle of Man. It's made up of grandees of local society. They're not healthcare experts, but they are former head teachers. They're not healthcare experts, but they are former people who've headed organisations like hospice. They're information technology people. They're well balanced, well rounded, mature people. And if they've got angry, there's something wrong. Minister Hooper is smart. There will be merit to the case that he's made in terms of the changes, but what he wants to do needs to be properly considered, and we need to go beyond the issues that could be perceived as bullying, unfairness, knee-jerk, high-handed. We need to get beyond that. There have been, it's quite clear from the information paper that's before Timwood members, that there have been complaints about behaviours made in this respect. That's a slightly separate issue, unless it becomes the issue again now, because my basic position is that these regulations need to be annulled, and then we need to do the process again properly with proper consultation, so we end up with an optimal, rational basis for this committee. Because we have to remember, healthcare isn't working in the Isle of Man, and what we have here is a group of people, 9 people, who get a small amount of money to look at why it's not working. They've come up with 6 sensible recommendations at first sight, and they can't just be dismissed without the public having a backlash about that. That sounds like dismissing the medical director or dismissing a question from a journalist. We've got to actually make sure that healthcare is at the focus of all of this, proper democracy and proper engagement of the public through bodies like the Health Services Consultative Committee.
Andrew Cole's words, they were in breach of the Nolan principles, and also the minister was in breach of the ministerial code. Shouldn't these matters be being investigated by somebody?
Well, I imagine they are being investigated, but what's clear to me is this isn't the right place on a media channel at this stage to even speculate about these things. In one sense, for me to speculate at least, because I'm a Timwood member, because I can do things inside the Timwood Court. Secondly, it's not really appropriate that this is played out on the floor of Timwood Court, but I really do hope that the Chief Minister has taken these suggestions seriously. And I, you know, in my dream, the Chief Minister or one of his ministers stands up and seconds my annulment regulations so that we can take a few months to regroup, refresh, rethink and come up with an optimal, rational solution that works for the people and the future of healthcare on this island. Minister Ashford, when he stood down, was really, really wise. He said when he'd become the focus of attention to do with an earlier stage of healthcare shenanigans perhaps, and he just said, I'm the focus now, and so it's only right that I stand down, because what matters is healthcare and policy, and perhaps Minister Hooper's in that situation now.
Were Minister Hooper here, he would probably say something like, well, look, Chris, you were sacked, this is sour grapes on your part, you're just lashing out at whoever happens to be nearest and an easy target.
I hope he wouldn't. It was me who I think called for Minister Ashford to reflect on his position, and he did. I think the Manx Radio interview shows that back in whatever it was, May 2022. You know, I have been in the House of Keys for 11 years, and I'm doing this because of the democracy and public policy in healthcare primarily. Minister Hooper's got lots and lots of qualities, but it's not about him. This is about the future of healthcare, and it's about how people like the Health Services Consultative Committee members are engaged in the process. And we don't want high-handed, knee-jerk, reactions. We want the public to understand that the right decision has been made about the optimal organisation of the scrutiny function of healthcare.
From what you're saying, there doesn't seem to have been any consultation on these changes. Were you aware of the changed constitution prior to going to Tynwald for negative resolution last month?
I think people are aware that there was an issue and a challenge, because since June we got the first email with a summary of the report from the Health Services Consultative Committee. I've been aware of this of the intention to change the regulations since about then, because I think I heard it on media, you know, through the interviews at the time. So I've been aware of it, but I don't think it was in the 22-23 departmental plan for the Department of Health and Social Care, which suggests to me that this is a knee-jerk, high-handed reaction to a bit of a spat.
And has there been any actual consultation?
The only consultation has been with the Health Services Consultative Committee, and I put down a written question that actually got the that consultation response published a couple of days ago, and that explicitly says that the department regards this as an operational matter, so therefore it didn't formally consult with professional bodies or with Manx Care or with the public, because it regards it as an operational matter about how its consultative committee gives it advice. And a big thing in all of this is the independence of the members of the Health Services Consultative Committee, because up till now they've been appointed by the Appointments Commission, which is a neutral independent body, and perhaps the most significant change is that after this they'll be appointed by the Health Department of Health and Social Care, and their contention is if they don't always sing the praises and say everything's hunky-dory, they'll be out. And to me that's a valid view to hold.
So using the analogy of the recent takeover of Shoprite by Tesco, effectively this is the equivalent of Tesco appointing the members of the board of the Office of Fair Trading.
Yeah, it's a regulatory capture is the jargon phrase, and that's what I worry about, and that's what the Health Services Consultative Committee have contended.
So presumably Tynwald members will be reacting quite strongly to this, because this does appear at least to be an attempt to sort of pull the teeth of the Health Services Consultative Committee.
I hope they react like that. I hope they're really reflecting on it. It's a difficult topic. In a way, it doesn't actually make anything in healthcare better in itself, but it is characteristic of what conceivably is wrong. You know, if there is unfairness at work in healthcare and that's affecting healthcare delivery, the change to that culture and getting rid of that's got to start at the top. So with assertions going around that there's bad behaviour right at the top, it doesn't actually sort of encourage a good behaviour further down the organisation. If scrutiny has got to be independent and the future public policy is the most important thing in this, it doesn't look good. If anybody says there's anything wrong, they immediately get shouted at and treated in a high-handed way, knee-jerk way. So I hope that Tynwald members reflect. I hope the Chief Minister is currently finishing Council Ministers, where they've all agreed that they'll come in and second my motion, and in which point we can then have cool reflection, calculation, and come up with an optimal and a rational way forward, rather than what to my mind seems like high-handed, knee-jerk reaction.
And these regulations presumably will have had support from Council of Ministers. I mean, the Minister can't just go ahead and put legislation on the Tynwald Order paper without consulting Council of Ministers.
That's true. All government business goes through Council of Ministers, so as a minimum they'll have been on a list for Labour before, but there won't have been any discussion because they're not voted on. I think this is the first time there's been a move to annul regulations in my time. I'm perhaps wrong, perhaps I forget one. It's becoming quite common though now, because I do see that there's a proposal in December, Tynwald, to annul a planning decision of the Council of Ministers, so perhaps that started a new trend, a new constitutional first.
Minister Hooper, you might not be too surprised to learn, has quite a different take on things. Has he been picking a fight with the committee?
So I'm not picking a fight with anyone. I should be quite clear on that. There's a lot of complicated backstory to some of this. But in essence, the HSCC, when they did report to Tynwald, they produced a report that, as I've said before, contained a lot of things that just weren't accurate, factually inaccurate. So I'd like to draw a distinction between differences of opinion, which there will always be some, and that's perfectly fine. Everyone's entitled to an opinion. But there's also stuff in it which is objectively simply not true. And that's where I think I have some concerns. I obviously expressed these concerns to the committee prior to them. Well, I say prior to them publishing. I wasn't really given an opportunity to see the report prior to it being published. It was then sent to Timor members, obviously, as it is. But it contains statements in there which are about me, specifically that I've supported the way that they operate, when I know that that is not the case. And so it's a mystery, really, to me, why they would have chosen as a committee to publish that report, which made statements which I know to be completely and utterly inaccurate. So that's the bit that confuses me a little bit. As part of the work we're doing in the department, we're also going through a process of looking at all of our statutory committees and trying to reform the way that they work. So we've already done that with the review bodies, so the complaints ombudsman that we've set up, the ombudsman body. That was the first on the list. The HSCC is next, and then we'll also look at the Mental Health Commission. And in some cases, what we're doing is looking at expanding the remit, in other cases, just changing the remit. The regulations that we've brought forward for the HSCC are aimed at trying to improve patient experience. Now, that's something which sounds quite minor in the grand scheme of things, but actually can be really, really important when you're trying to access health services. We've already got our clinical audits from CQC, from Ofsted. We've already got our safety work going on. We have a lot of work going on through the mandate assurance process around KPIs and delivery. But that bit around, what do patients see? How do patients interact with the service, and what can we do to sort of make things better at the ground level? That's where it's a bit trickier to get information. So we have lots of kind of feedback and surveys and patient representatives and all those kind of things anyway. But having a bit more of a focus around that, like they do in the UK with what are called community health councils or Health Watch, is something that we could do with here. And that's been on the cards for a while. When we've proposed this change to the HSCC, they haven't liked that. Again, I'm unclear as to why. You'll see in the consultation response that was published, they've articulated their views in there. I don't really understand how they can be opposed to this. What I see is quite a positive change in policy, but ultimately it's absolutely their right to have a different view to me. That's not a problem. But then the way they've gone about challenging that policy change, I think, has brought to the fore a lot of this kind of what I would describe as unprofessional behaviour. And in subsequent correspondence with Timor members, they've again reiterated some of the things which I think we all know aren't entirely accurate. And again, that's a mystery to me. I don't really know why that would be the case, because they do have a genuine view about these regs. There's no reason they can't articulate that simply, you know, like anyone would. I'm unclear as to why they've also decided to go kind of at the personal side of things as well. I can't really comment for them. That's not my job. All I can say is from my perspective is whenever I've made statements to the House of Keys or to Timwald, or whenever I've tried briefing Timwald members about these things, I'm always trying to put things in a very positive light, trying to explain the reasons why we're doing these things. But also I wouldn't make statements to Timwald that I didn't have documentary evidence to support. I don't think that would be appropriate for me to say things that I wasn't able to substantiate.
And I should say I have put out requests to the Health Services Consultative Committee, and none of the existing members were available to take part in this programme. But there are things that have been said which would indicate that you have had charges made against you for breaches of the ministerial code. It was suggested that in what you apparently described as a rant to the Health Services Consultative Committee in a meeting in June, that you behaved in an unprofessional way in breach of the ministerial code. So has such a charge been made against you?
Yes, they have definitely made that charge. I would encourage you to talk to the then chair of the HSCC about the veracity of those allegations, because again, I have to be very careful what I say for want of prejudicing investigations that are going on into the behaviour of the HSCC around this issue. But from my perspective, they are entirely unfounded. And like I say, if you talk to the person who chaired the meeting in question, I'm sure he'll be able to confirm that to you quite easily. And again, if needs be, I have documentary support to confirm that's the case. So from my perspective, again, I'm very unclear as to why they've decided to make this quite personal. It's not something that I've tried to do. I've tried to keep this at a professional level and a policy disagreement rather than a personal one. But ultimately, like I said, the unprofessional behaviour of some of the current members is, from my perspective, entirely out of order. I mean, even the very fact that Mr. Cole has been told some of this stuff, which, as far as I'm aware, was supposed to have been kept confidential as part of the investigation process, speaks to the fact that they really don't have much respect or regard for our democratic processes, really. And ultimately, like I say, when I am able to respond to the debate in Tynwald, should any of these issues come up, I will be happy to circulate the written documentary correspondence that I have, text messages, emails, a letter in one case from the HSCC to confirm actually this is what's going on, what's really been going on. I have very few concerns in this respect in terms of the allegations that they're making being entirely and completely unfounded. That's pretty much all I've got to say on it. When all the dust settles on this, I'll be happy to talk to you in detail about some of the machinations that were going on within the HSCC around that. But ultimately, like I say, if you want to go and talk to an impartial party who is actually a member of the committee, I'm sure they'd be happy to discuss the realities with you.
What bemuses me is we have, on the one hand, a relatively mild-mannered former head teacher who is not known for significant political interventions, saying one thing. We've got you saying something quite different. As a minister, is it not part of your role to try and find out, you know, when something is obviously going badly wrong, to actually sit down with people and try and resolve the matter so that you don't end up effectively having to fight things on the floor of Tynwald?
Absolutely, and I think that's something that we've tried to do as a department. I need to be quite clear on this, actually. This isn't some kind of personal crusade of mine. The decisions we've made about reforming the HSCC have been made collectively, and that's just the way that I like to operate. So we have been trying, I think, to bring people along with us, but ultimately, like you've quite clearly articulated, for reasons known only to themselves, some members of the HSCC have decided that they have some kind of personal vendetta here. I don't know why. I don't really want to engage in that, to be honest. It's not behaviour that I think is appropriate. It's not something that I want to respond to as much as I can get away with. But from my perspective, we've tried to bring them with us. We've tried to explain. There have been lots of meetings, not just with officers in the department as well as politicians, trying to explain what we're trying to achieve, the benefits of what we're trying to do, trying to make sure that the views of members are taken on board, because with the regulations there was a consultation exercise, and you'll see we have made some changes to the detail in the regulations following that consultation. So we have tried to make changes where we can make those changes work with what our eventual end goal is. So we really are trying to do this in a positive way. Ultimately, that has been very one-sided, and I think in some instances this is where you end up. I mean, you'll hear from others, I suppose, that there have been a lot of cultural issues across the health and care service over the years, and from my perspective, I think this is a very good case in point where you do have quite embedded practices that really aren't conducive to good working, that aren't conducive to the positive kind of transformational change we're trying to see. And ultimately, sometimes when you try and make these changes, you do get bite back, and you know that's part of the process, I think. It's just unfortunate that because of the way that this particular committee is established, it has to go through a Tynwald process in order to make these changes, which inevitably then makes everything more public than it would be if it was a sort of a very operational change.
Before you were made minister, you had a record of being very outspoken in favour of independent scrutiny, and yet part of these regulations effectively allow you as minister to decide who's going to scrutinise your work.
So I need to stop you there, because actually the function of the HSCC, as set down in the primary law, which I'm not seeking to change, is to report on service delivery. That's very clear in the law. And services are delivered by Manx Care, not by the department. So the intention here is to make sure that the organisation is focused on services, on GPs, on cancer care, on maternity, on the stuff that patients interact with every day. That is what we're trying to do, is to refocus the organisation onto Manx Care. Because again, if you read the primary law, they are a committee established by the department. That's what the law says. They've always been a department committee. And so what they should be doing is reporting what they see to the department. I've already been very clear with my colleagues in Tynwald that the intention would be that we still publish HSCC reports, and if members want to debate those in Tynwald, that's still going to be an option open to them, because I think the way that you tackle some of the more entrenched problems is you give them more visibility. So I would like to see these reports published, and I would like to see them still part of the political discourse going forwards. And if, again, you look at the consultation that's been published in part of the written answer, originally we tried to include in the regulations a requirement that the HSCC still act independently. So irrespective of the fact they'd be legally appointed by the department, we wanted to include in the regulations a requirement that they still tender their independent views to the department. They asked for that to be taken out. The HSCC asked for that to be taken. I don't know why. We were trying to say you should still absolutely act as independently as you can and to provide your own perspective on what you see and what you hear and what patients tell you, because that's quite important to me as a minister, because I don't get to see the ground level stuff anymore because I don't deliver it. It's done by Manx Care. And so I need to see not only Manx Care's perspective and my officer's perspective and the CQC's perspective, I also want to see the patient's perspective. And that's where the HSCC, I think, can add real value. And so I'm really trying to say, you should be doing the thing that the law says you should do, that I fully believe should be happening. You could be a critical part of our governance structure within the Department of Health and Social Care. And that absolutely requires there to be an element of independent thought and independent action on this. Conversely, though, I think there should also be some form of accountability. So at present, there is no accountability because the HSCC are not appointed by the department. They're appointed by the Appointments Commission. There is no Tynwald oversight there. If you're appointed by the department, well, actually, the minister can then be held accountable in Tynwald for things that the HSCC say and do. Ultimately, then, there is democratic accountability for the way that they would operate. So I think whilst trying to retain an element of independence from the department, it is also important to say they shouldn't be independent of Tynwald, because Tynwald ultimately should have that oversight.
I'm a little bit puzzled here. I would guess that Laurie Hooper, backbencher, if something like this had come forward, would be very much asking some questions as to how this can be seen as independent. You know, why is the minister trying to make this change? What is the purpose? I mean, you say it's about accountability. Are you then saying that effectively we need to get rid of the Appointments Commission because everything that they appoint to is therefore not going to be accountable in the future? It seems a strange argument.
The Appointments Commission exists to appoint to tribunals, to the judiciary, primarily. That's what the law says. In fact, I think they're established in the Tribunals Act, funnily enough. And that's for people that really shouldn't be accountable to ministers and through them to Parliament, because the judiciary should be independent, really, of that part of the structure. Where you've got bodies like, for example, the Prison Independent Monitoring Board, that is appointed by the Department of Home Affairs, because the Department of Home Affairs oversees the operation of the prison, and it is considered that that body is independent enough of the operation, even though they're appointed by the department. So that's pretty much what we're mirroring here. We're also intending to try and produce what we're calling a framework agreement, which we will publish, which will very clearly set out the relationship between the HSCC and the department. That doesn't exist at the minute. There is no framework. There is no way you can publicly understand how these relationships all fit together. So we're trying to actually improve the amount of transparency that we've got here. And from my perspective, when I was a backbencher, I would have had concerns, and I did have concerns about the way that this particular committee operated, simply because I was never really clear what value they were adding. You know, ultimately, at the time, they were scrutinising services from a lay perspective, but there were no CQC inspections. There were no Ofsted inspections. And so it was difficult to understand, were they intended to replace the CQC, or were they intended to supplement those in some way? And my perspective is that actually they can supplement the professional clinical oversight that we have. And that's what we're trying to do with this body, is say, yes, actually, we definitely want your feedback. We want you to talk to patients. We want you to observe the way things actually work from a patient perspective. And we want you to feed that back to Manx Care almost in real time, but also to us and to Tynwald members. And then when changes aren't made, actually, you can keep on at us about those things. And there should be some visibility about, well, why haven't you made some of these quite what you think of as low level or minor changes, but might actually have quite a big impact on patients. That's where I see them adding a lot of value. And I've tried to consistently be quite positive about this, because I do think it could potentially be a positive change for the service, and it could really add a lot more value to what we're seeing from the HSCC. So again, I'm sitting here completely bemused as to why, for example, Mr. Thomas wants to annul these regulations, because I can see them as being really an entirely positive change to the way that we oversee Manx care, to the way that we get information about care services. The other thing we're seeking to do, which I probably should mention, is currently the HSCC only have advisories to look over National Health Service services, so the healthcare bit. We're actually looking to try and extend their remit into social care as well. At present, that is something that is very much outside their scope. These regulations are also designed to try and give them a broader reach so they can start talking to children and families or adult social services to actually provide some feedback and oversight of those services as well. So it's an entirely new and expanded remit for them. So again, when you say, are you trying to close down scrutiny? Well, the answer is exactly the opposite. We're trying to expand the things that they are allowed to comment on, the things that we would like them to comment on. And again, I see that again as being quite a positive thing, really.
What you're saying is that the reason you didn't bring the Health Services Consultative Committee's report to Tynwald this time round is because, as Minister, you didn't feel as though you could account for their report. So you wanting to make these changes so that in future, when a report comes, you will be held to account for the findings of that report. Is that pretty much how you're thinking?
I think in a nutshell, that's quite a fair way of describing it. It's not the whole picture, but that's a good part of it. And I actually said as much to the HSCC when they sent me a copy of what they call their Tynwald brief, which isn't the report, but it's a section of the report. And I told them that because I hadn't had a chance to comment on it beforehand, I wouldn't be able to stand behind it. If it turned out there were issues, and say a member of Tynwald asked me, well, hold on, why have they said this? If it turned out that wasn't correct, I wouldn't be able to stand behind that report, that claim in the report. And it's worth being clear, actually, while we're talking, there is a lot in that report that is quite good, actually. It's not universally bad. It really isn't. And there's a lot of the things in there that are conclusions or recommendations that I would probably agree with as well. It's just because there is so much in it that isn't quite right, I didn't feel that I could stand behind it, and I wasn't willing to associate myself with that report. And actually, there's no obligation on me to do so either. And that's another the thing that I think people misunderstand. There is no obligation on this to be debated by Tynwald. All the recommendations in the report, we have actually considered them meaningfully. We have gone through and thought about what they were trying to achieve and whether we could do them. And unfortunately, for various reasons that I'll outline next week, they aren't realistic recommendations. But we have gone through that process already. So the debate in next week, in some way, isn't going to serve any purpose, because the law requires us to have regard to these recommendations, and we've done that.
It does serve a purpose in as much as the public will actually get to find out what you've been doing behind the scenes. Do you regret anything about what went on? I mean, is it possible, for example, that had you been a little bit less robust in your responses in July, that maybe this issue could have been nipped in the bud and you wouldn't have had effectively what appears to be, anyway, a Health Services Committee writing to Tynwald members saying that they should annul the regulations that you've passed?
This was always going to happen. I mean, as soon as we saw that report in the first instance, and I asked them to substantiate some of the things that included in it, and they were unable to do so, or so far at least, haven't provided me with anything. I think it was always going to end up in this kind of conflict, because ultimately, you know, from their perspective, they've produced a report that they've put a lot of effort into, a lot of time into, which I fully respect, but ultimately, if what they're saying just isn't based on fact, isn't supported by evidence, then actually the report itself doesn't have a lot of value. And so there's no way of telling somebody that that's going to go down well. If you tell someone who's put a lot of time and effort into a piece of work that you haven't been able to substantiate some of these, sometimes quite serious things that you're saying, actually, where is the value there? The reality is then, when I didn't lay that in front of Tynwald because I couldn't myself stand behind it, I think we were always going to end up on a collision course. And you'll note that I've been quite careful so far not to go through those in detail. And that's quite a deliberate choice I've made, because I really don't see a lot of benefit in having this out in public almost. I'm being forced to by virtue of the fact that the HSCC themselves are writing to people and Mr. Thomas has brought these motions.
Is Chris Thomas just making mischief?
No, I don't think Chris is doing this for the sake of it. That doesn't strike me as being a Chris Thomas approach. But yes, his eventual end goals may be a little bit opaque to the rest of us, as is usually the case with Chris. But I'm sure he will explain in great detail when he moves these motions exactly what his thinking is.
That was Health Minister Laurie Hooper. Having listened to both sides, what do you think? Do you share my bemusement as how well-respected voices can reach such markedly different views on the matter? For now, I'm Phil Gorn, Goramayos and Geisiokrom. Thanks for listening.